We continue our series this morning as we go through these verses at the end of Acts chapter 2. Over recent months, as I've talked to a number of you and we've had conversations in different places, as I've spoken to other ministers around the area and across the country, the one thing that keeps coming up time and time again is the fact that Christians have missed most over this life is the opportunity to meet together to worship and to sing. That's one of the things that actually people have said they've struggled with the most. You know, to sit at home and to listen to someone prattling on online is one thing, but to sit at home and try and sing by yourself at home is a completely different thing, isn't it? You know, to be able to sit at home and take communion by yourself or as a couple is not the same as doing it in the corporate. So while some elements have been positive, these particular elements have been particularly difficult for us. Before we kind of dive into Acts chapter 2 this particular subject this morning, can I urge you and plead with you as much as I can not to forget how it felt not to be able to be together and to sing and to share communion? Because what's going to happen, and I can guarantee you this, is that the enemy will get in and he will try and persuade us that some weeks, oh, it's okay to stay at home. I don't feel quite up to it today. I'll stay at home. Now, for me as a minister, you know, the joke around that I have with funeral directors and lots of other people is that I only work one day a week, and that's a Sunday. So for me, I don't have a... It's not an option, really, for me to start to plan things over the weekend that take me out of church on a Sunday. However, for all of you, you do have that choice. You choose, and you can make choices that can enable you to be here on Sunday or not. Now, I'm not saying that you can't go away. I'm not saying you can't have holidays. But just remember those last 18 months and what it felt like not to be able to come together to sing and to worship. Because the enemy will want to stop us doing it. He will want to persuade us, okay, we can just join in online. He will want to persuade us that actually there are better options for us. Don't forget that sense of loss that you had. That sense of feeling isolated that you had. Because coming together to worship is so, so crucially important for us as Christians. So just remember over these next years what it felt like over these last 18 months. And try to remember that. Try to make choices that will enable you to be here as much as you can or wherever you are worshiping. Because gathering together for worship, gathering together as God's people, is so important and so valuable for us. God has been very gracious to us in whilst we've been away. You know, I believe that God has enabled us to grow and to connect in a way which perhaps we would not have thought in March 2020 would have been possible. But I believe he's allowed that to happen. So we're into this next section. They devoted themselves in Acts chapter 2, verse 42, to the apostles' teaching, to fellowship, and to the breaking of bread. They devoted themselves. They made a choice. These early disciples, these new Christians, these people that had only just been on the road just a few days, perhaps, in some cases, or a few months. The longest, as I said right at the start of the series, that many of these people had been a Christian, a follower of Jesus, had been 3 years. So they weren't sort of vastly experienced in terms of time. But as a body of people, they made the choice that they were going to give themselves and commit themselves to being part of this family. And this meant that they gave themselves to the apostles' teaching, to being a place to learn, a place to learn together, to talk together, to understand the scriptures, to understand the teachings of Jesus and how it applied to them. Not just to gain head knowledge, but to be able to work that out in reality, in relationship, in life, in their daily walks. What did it mean when Jesus talked about giving and talked about forgiveness and talked about love and talked about not worrying? What does that actually mean in the day-to-day? And these early disciples, these early Christians gave themselves, devoted themselves to figuring that stuff out together. They devoted themselves to fellowship. Looked at this last Sunday as being a place to love. Being together, that sense of koinonia, sharing everything in common, encouraging one another, nurturing each other, challenging each other, speaking the truth in love to one another. How do we do that as a church today? What does that look like for us here at Barmore? What does that look like for me in my life? That I allow people to challenge me and to speak into my life. And this week, we're looking at the breaking of bread and a place of worship. We know that the early church met in the temple courts because it says in this passage, so go back and read Acts 2:42-47, we know that the early church, these early Christians, met in the temple courts and they met in their homes. So they met in these two places, in the temple and in the home. Now we know that they wouldn't have been doing the breaking of bread in the temple because the temple was still caught up with the Old Testament sacrificial system. That was practiced at the temple until it was destroyed in AD 70. So we know that when they went to the temple, that system of sacrifice was still operating. And it wouldn't have been appropriate for them to sit around in a little huddle and probably break bread. But what did happen is when they met in their homes, when they shared meals together, they would, as part of that meal, include this element of breaking of bread and of drinking the cup. It's part of their routine when they gathered together. Now, Paul wrote to the church in Corinth to address some instruction and give some instructions to the church there and to put in place some correction that needed to happen. Now, the early church wouldn't have fallen into these traps, into these abuses already, because it's very new. But let's read these verses. These are well-known verses. We kind of come across them most weeks when we do communion. So this is from 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 23-26. For I received from the Lord what I also passed on to you. The Lord Jesus, on the night he was betrayed, took bread. And when he given thanks, he broke it and said, "This is my body which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, after supper, he took the cup, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me. For whenever you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes." When you go home a little bit later, perhaps pick out 1 Corinthians. We'll pick out your Bibles first of all. That's probably more helpful. And then turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and read this section, but keep going on a bit further. Because in the verses that follow, Paul deals with some issues in the church there that were not appropriate. So as people were coming in Corinth to celebrate the breaking of bread, remember, it would have happened around the meal table. So it wouldn't have been a kind of like come together and have a sort of more formal thing. It would have been very natural around the meal table. And some people were getting to that point and they were hungry because they hadn't eaten all day. And so they would scoff the bread and not wait for everybody else. Other people were necking the wine and getting drunk. That was the reality. And Paul goes to them, that's not appropriate. That's not what Jesus instructed us to do when, on the night he was betrayed. He condemned those who were abusing that remembrance element in those ways and said to them, get back to what it's all about. Get back to the reality of what it's for. The breaking of bread is about gathering together to remember and to offer thanks to God for all that he gave to us in Jesus. To honour Jesus as the one who gave his life for us. The significance of the breaking of bread is an act of worship. It's an act of obedience. It's an act of remembrance and reverence. An act in which God is honoured, Father, Son and Spirit. So when we read that these early believers devoted themselves to the breaking of bread, they are giving themselves and making the choice to give themselves and to commit themselves to taking that time to remember, to celebrate, to honour God. And they did that whenever they came together. Notice in that passage, it's whenever you come together, do this. But what happened in the church there? It says a little bit further on that they broke bread in their homes and they ate together with glad and sincere hearts. See, when we come to share bread and wine, when we come to this moment of remembrance, we do so with a mix of joy and reverence. It is both a celebration and an act of remembrance. You know, some of us, sometimes the focus is more on the reflection and the remembrance stuff. Sometimes it's more celebratory. And that may be reflecting on where we're at in our own lives and our own walk with Jesus. But sometimes we can make this moment so solemn, so almost significant, that we forget that it's celebrating the fact that Jesus Christ is alive. There isn't any joy in the celebrating of bread and wine. I mean, we're reminding ourselves that Jesus Christ died for us. That is a moment of reverence and remembrance. But we're also remembering that he conquered sin and death. That through Jesus' death, we have life. We remind ourselves that we do this until he comes again. And when he creates a new heaven and a new earth, we won't be sharing bread and wine together because we will be with him. The fact that he's coming back again, that's another reason to celebrate and to be joyful, particularly when we see the mess that our world is in. So this celebration, this act of remembering is something that we should enjoy in the sense of it should bring us joy in our lives. It should be something that we are able to celebrate, as well as taking the time to think and to reflect and to do it in the right way, not to abuse it, not to take advantage of it, as was happening in the early church. And getting that balance right, as I say, sometimes can be tricky. And sometimes we go one way or the other. But we need to remember that we're here as we come and share bread and wine together to celebrate and to remember. It's both something we do with glad, joyful hearts, but also that sincerity that we recognize and are recognizing what Christ has done for us. But I want to go on from that a little bit further, because I think sometimes we can miss the next part of this that happens that perhaps isn't stated in here, but there were two ordinances that Jesus left the church, two things that we were asked to do. The first is to do this in remembrance of me, and the other is to repent and be baptized. At the core, at its core, because Jesus asked us to do it, when we come to take bread and wine, it's an act of obedience. We are doing it because Jesus has asked us to do it. We're not doing it because we think it's a good idea. We're not doing it because somebody has told us to do it. We're not doing it because the leaders have decided we're going to do it in this particular way. We're doing it because Jesus asked us, when we come together, to do this. It's an act of obedience. Obedience is something that isn't dependent upon us. It's not dependent on the weather. It's not dependent on what we've been told to do. Obedience is something that we choose to do. We choose to make ourselves and obedient. We choose to obey what God has done for us. And if we choose not to do it, what's God's response? He doesn't love us any less, does he? He doesn't get stroppy with us. He doesn't get bolshy with us and complain at us. He loves us. He loves us no less if we don't obey than if we do. But he loves it when we obey him. Jesus says, "If you love me, keep my commandments." If you love me, keep my commandments. Now, seven words there. There isn't a lot of ambiguity there. There's not a lot of wriggle room there, is there? If you love me, well, that's a yes or a no. Do you? If you love God, do you? Well, okay. Keep my commands. Simple, really. Well, on paper it is anyway, isn't it? the actual reality is somewhat different to that. Now, Jesus gave us two commands as a church. The first is to do this in remembrance of me, to share bread and wine. The second is to baptize. Now, Jesus also gave us as Christians a whole bunch of other things to do. How we should live, how we should interact, how we should care, how we should give, how we should do all those other things. But they're not commands for the church. As a church, there are two things that we're asked to do together, collectively, to share bread and wine and to be baptized. Both of those are acts of obedience. And an act of obedience is actually an act of worship. Because in obeying God and obeying what Jesus instructs us to do, we are putting him first in our lives. We are making a choice to put him first. We are making a choice to honor him. And that's what worship is. Worship is about putting someone in that rightful place, making that person most important. We see that in the world, in the sporting arena, in all sorts of other ways. People get put onto pedestals and were honoured in certain ways. They become the focus. They become something significant and something more than just part of everybody else. They're lifted up, as it were. And when we obey Christ, when we obey what Jesus asks us to do, we are putting him in that position where we're surrendering to what he has asked us to do. So worship is about obedience. Worship is about doing what God asks us to do. And God has asked us to do two things as a church collectively, to do this in remembrance of me. And notice that it doesn't have to be once a week on the first, or once a week, or even on once a month on the first Sunday of the month, or as some churches are, the first Sunday in the morning and the third Sunday in the evening. It doesn't have to be once a year. Loads of different churches have different traditions of how they practice bread and wine and the sharing of communion. Jesus' instructions and Paul's instructions that he reflected to the Corinthians was, whenever you eat this bread and drink this cup, it doesn't just have to be in these moments. I remember years ago talking to a fellow minister who was saying that there was a group of them had a meal together, and one of them just said, why don't we share bread and wine? So in the context of, I don't know, they might have a curry or something, I don't know what they'd had to eat that night, someone went and got the wine and the bread and they just shared communion together. That's the New Testament way. That's the early church way. As they ate together, they took that moment to share bread and wine together. Whenever you do it, as often as you do it, do this in remembrance of me. So we share bread and wine and we have the opportunity to be baptized. I think it's important that these two things are recognized as acts of obedience, acts of worship. Collectively, this is what we do as a church. And for some of us, we need to recognize this and we need to respond to this. We need to recognize that God is nudging us and saying, I kind of made it quite clear. If you love me, keep my commandments. There's two things I've asked you to do as a church. Are you doing it? But fundamentally, for all of us, behind that is this other element, which is about being obedient to God. So we might share communion, we might have been baptized. That doesn't mean to say that we're being obedient to God in our lives. I said many times as a church, we want to encourage us to be helping one another on our daily journeys. We want to be accountable to each other. We have a covenant as a church for those in membership, and it sets out what membership looks like. It's a high ideal, it's a high aspiration. The reality is none of us hit that target, but it doesn't stop us setting out to head that way. But the idea behind it is that it helps us to have those honest conversations. Where am I not being obedient to God? Where are you not being obedient to God? Because obedience is our worship. It's when we put God first and foremost and center stage in our lives. What does it mean for you to worship God. And yes, you might have been baptized, and yes, you might be sharing communion on a regular basis. But the question for all of us is, am I being obedient? Are you being obedient day in, day out? Are you choosing to keep his commands? Choosing to do the things that God has asked you to do because you love him. If you love me, keep my commands. That's the challenge for us. As a church, that's the journey we're on together, is how do we do this? How do we encourage each other to be obedient to God? I've been in church all my life. Not many churches, it must be said. I've had a few churches in that time that have been significant parts of my life. I've been around Christians a long time. Have I ever had people challenge me and call me out and say, are you being obedient? Not very often. Not very often. Because it's not something that's very British. It's not very us, is it? We kind of go home and we put up our drawbridges, and this is my little area. And I kind of come out and do my thing, but then I go back and this is my world. I don't want anybody asking me how I'm doing. I don't want anyone telling me that perhaps I need to think about this stuff. I know it all. I've read my Bible from back to front and front to back. But the reality is, as a church, as Christians, we need to be those who hold each other to account. Who kind of say to one another, look guys, if you love me, keep my commands. That's what Jesus says. How are we doing that? How are you getting on? And it's not done because we're trying to call each other out and undermine each other. It's because we want to nudge each other and urge each other to keep growing. We want to becoming more like Jesus. And that's the essence behind the covenant. The question that we ask sometimes is, and the question I pose to you, are you more like Jesus today than you were yesterday? Are you more like Jesus now than you were at the start of this year? Because if you're not, you're kind of moving away from God, not towards God. For us as Christians, for us as a church, we want to be a church that encourages us to become more like Jesus day on day on day. That we better reflect who God is into our world. We are those who take his name into the world. He has instructed us to do that. Now, we want to do that in a way which is right and appropriate. As I said to you all the way through this series, we're posing questions as we go through this. And in small groups, we have opportunity to discuss some of this stuff and try and dig a little bit deeper. What does it look like? How do we do it? Is it right that we do it? Or do we just forget that and not ignore that completely? What's the right response? How does Barnwell become a place of worship? Not just where we share communion once a month on the first Sunday of the month. Not just when we have baptisms occasionally. But daily, weekly, being a place where we as God's people gather together, encourage one another to be obedient to him. What does it look like? How do we do that? Answers on a postcard, please. This is part of the journey we're on now, is to start digging, to ask these questions of each other. I'm not satisfied with just the status quo. I want to encourage us to be closer to like Jesus, to go deeper with him, to become more like him, that our life together as a church nudges and encourages us daily to become more like him. If God is saying to you, you need to be baptized, then don't run away from that. If God is saying to you, put me first, don't run away from that. Talk to people. Find somebody to talk to, someone to pray with you. Let's be a church where we continue to strive to honor God and to be obedient to him. Let's pray together.